This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Kevin. I'm a rock radio DJ. I'm a comedian. I do a lot of things that make my parents say, "You're still doing that?" And I say, "Yes." You can hear me on 104.9 The X in Rockford, Illinois, and in Springfield on 97.7 QLZ. They stream on the internet. You can also check out my comedy with Roast Battle Chicago. Our podcast is out now. If you like this podcast, go listen to that podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts is where you should go get Roast Battle Chicago.
This is going to be a great JBTV podcast right here on Pantheon Podcast. This week, we're featuring Kevin Kellum right here on JBTV, the podcast.
JBTV. Welcome to the JBTV Podcast. Each and every show is dedicated to great music lovers. Are you ready? The podcast starts right here, right now.
New music.
So
this is a trip. This is a trip, dude.
Yeah, I'm glad you had a chance to come down. I was, going, I guess we could do it on Zoom. But
are we just rolling right now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. I didn't know when
I don't.
We started,
you know, yet. Come on. This is
exactly.
JBTV. When have you?
It's the big elaborate setup that makes you feel big time. But then you're also like, yeah, we just go with it. there is the standard like cut go. This thing. Now you're on this corporate broadcaster. Then we hit our cues. But we have the million. Equipment, but I love we have we still have a college radio approach, which I can appreciate.
Yeah. Cool. So nice and close to this mic.
Sure,
so you sound better.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All
you know, it's like radio.
Yeah. I work in radio and I should remember how to talk into a microphone.
Yeah. Well, there
is
you
that
go.
Better?
Yeah. That's cool.
I love how you know if it doesn't sound good just by looking at it.
I just,
like,
yeah.
That's how.
Well, these are shotguns, and
okay.
I really get a kick out of when we go to like Lollapalooza and stuff. You can't hear a damn thing.
Because there's so much sound, yeah.
When I went back to the studio with these mics, it sounds like, what? Yeah, it sounds like I have a hearing problem, because you can hear everybody perfectly. There's not an issue whatsoever. You know, because the quality's so good on these. And, you know, it's just the only way to do it, you know.
Yeah, so how is it adapting to the new studio?
I love it.
Yeah? Is there a convenience to it that you like too?
Yeah, I like getting up and just working.
I've been doing radio from home, rock radio from home, 5 days a week, and then I have my podcasting job as well and other stuff, and it's all like I do not have this elaborate setup. It is a computer, it is a USB, it is a USB microphone, condenser mic, simpler stuff, and I'm on 5 days a week.
Wow.
From my home in Chicago, and I'm in Rockford and Springfield, which don't feel that far away, and I go there often enough, so it isn't like, oh, too far.
Uh-huh.
But there is still this weird disconnect to getting used to broadcasting from home, and we're so removed culturally from the pandemic. You know, we can get around. We've had concerts. We just had Lollapalooza and Riot Fest and the club.
Did you go to any of them?
I didn't go to Lolla this year. I went to Riot Fest and I had a really good time.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of fun to do it now, and I guess we'll touch on it at some point. But
yeah.
It's fun to do it now and not have like the professional obligations, I guess, with it. Like I'm still there in like a rock radio capacity, but I'm not there. The way I was like years ago when I was doing stuff for radio here in Chicago.
Yeah, because you were working all the time.
It was still fun.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still going and having a good time.
Yeah.
But it's still the madness of being at a festival where you're like, oh, you see the whole lineup? And you're like, I'm going to see all of these bands. And you end up, you likely miss...
All of them.
Maybe, not all of them, but like, you'll miss a good half of the list that you make out for yourself before you go to a three-day festival.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone out there is watching or listening and they say, oh, I went to a festival and I saw all the bands I wanted to see I did never believe it. There's always a band you miss out, and you're like, they're a football field over there. And
well,
I'm
especially at Lollapalooza, it's like it's a 20-minute walk to get to the other side if you
want.
Which
I don't hold against Lollapalooza. It's just we're just spoiled in that regard,
right?
You know, and you hear from people at Coachella as well, and all these big and how there's no way to lay those out. I think perfectly. There's just a way to lay them out like as better as you can. But it's so crazy now. I went to that and like running into people I know from Q101 and everything like that, the big alternative station here, mm-hmm. and some XRT people and people that are involved in the Chicago rock radio world. It was just odd because I'm still broadcasting from Chicago, but I'm not on air in Chicago. People don't flip on the radio. And even if you stream it, you tend to stream it. The station that's in your town, you tend to stream. But it's kind of neat when there's some people that are like, oh, I'm from Rockford. I live in Chicago, and now I listen to you. And I'm on 104.9 The X in Rockford.
104.9 The X.
104.9 The X. Yeah, which is like, you know, there's some doing like radio imaging stuff. That's such the standard rock name.
Yeah.
But it's been The X so long, people love it, right? They love that station. It's been around since the early 90s.
Do you have a Triple X After Dark?
No, we don't have Triple X After Dark. I bet we could. I bet it'd be easy, you know? It'll be sponsored by
all that would mean is three songs in a row.
Short songs. You really don't need long songs.
Well, you got to flip through, you know.
Cheap stuff. We'll be sponsored by those big Lion's Den billboards you always see when you're driving to Indiana or something like that.
Yeah.
But no. And then I'm with 97.7 QLZ, which is just about to celebrate its 30th anniversary in Springfield, Illinois. Which is the biggest rock radio station in central Illinois. It's just really cool. And it's a different energy. It's a different... thing to do. There's music you can play in those stations that I would play when I was on Q101.
But you have freedom at these stations more, don't you?
I have more freedom, there isn't the sense of we need it as tight as this. The timing that I can speak on air is... I'm not going to be indulgent. I'm not going to like go on air for like 5 minutes at a time. But like if you're waiting to hear the Foo Fighters and I'm going to give you information on the Foo Fighters, but I get to be a little bit goofier and I want to say indulgent. Uh-huh. I try not to tell myself I'm indulgent, you know, because you're still broadcasting. There's still people that are like listening because it's the soundtrack of their day or something like that. But it's weird the way that people in smaller towns, and it reminds me of being in the suburbs too, or maybe just being a Southside Chicago kid and then coming up to the North Side and having that chip on my shoulder. Uh-huh. Like you talk to people from Jersey, they're like, no, I mean, we like the Yankees, but we're from Jersey. That type of thing. And there was always that chip on my shoulder. Now I kind of have that, but I'm still like living in like a hip right outside of Logan Square with all like the black t-shirt, black blue jeans people, like all the rock club, the industry people. And then at the same time, I got it. All right, there's a VFW fundraiser we're doing in Rockford or in Love's Park, and you know this is going on. So so you're on the bus out there, the train down to Springfield and stuff like that. Or I'm still contact with them, not with the internet. You know, I could be on air in another city all the time.
It's
know?
Amazing, isn't it? How
it is. That changed. How much did that change broadcasting for you?
Totally. It's the pandemic that did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you already had it there with the internet, though, too. Like, I mean, yeah, like, but, in terms of all of it.
Yeah. JBTV, like, when I first started in radio, when I had a radio station in Milwaukee, 93 QFM, I had phone lines put into my house so I could run the transmitter, the whole thing from my house.
And you didn't that feel like it was just like an earth-shattering thing? Like
it was great, but I had a studio set up. See, I've always been. I have to have atmosphere.
Yes. Okay. You were.
So I had my console, my turntables, and tape machines, and everything there. You know.
And when it went digital, that had to be crazy for you though too. Well, that was all. You were all still cutting tape days.
Oh yeah, I was cutting tape till. Oh, God, with Joe Kelly until the 90s.
Did you physically slice the tape to like make production reels and stuff? How long would it take to make like a 30-second commercial? A
couple hours.
I remember I went to Columbia College. They had the radio department there, and you could get a degree in radio, which sounds crazy now. And I think they were telling us that we were the last class that would ever physically cut tape.
Yeah.
And it was like we literally only – I think we did one 30-second commercial. And I remember it was – you had to have four elements. You had to have background music in it. You had to have this. And you had to physically cut the tape and mix it and then like seal it. And then you could rip it digitally. And then you could – like. But
I didn't even have digital. It was all – so I had a 24-track tape deck.
Okay.
I had a bunch of two tracks. So what I would do is I would build my bed, my music bed and two track, cut it together, make it 30. I would put that transfer to my 24-track in stereo on tracks 15 and 16 or 23 and 24. And then I would have Joe Kelly come in and read all of his lines at 30 IPS. And I would go.
You were such a nerd for production, man. You know, you knew the exact like decibels and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Me, it's just like a simple Adobe Audio Edition. I use the same filters every day for like different things, maybe a bed or two.
Well, it's a whole different time. Yeah. See, back then it was tape. So you had to, you know, do everything on tape. It wasn't the same kind of thing. So, but then I would cut it up and put white leader tape in between the takes. And I would sit there with two tape machines timing it out just to get the rough timing. Then I would put it over to the 24 track, and because we did syndication.
Yeah.
So like Joe Kelly would be on in 50 markets, but we'd have like ELO tonight, you know, at wherever it was. But then it would be at the Springfield Auditorium or the Peoria Civic Center.
Oh, you're talking about for the tour.
For the tour spot. Yeah. So then I would have all these different tracks. Okay, here's Milwaukee, San Francisco, Los Angeles. So we would have generic parts, and just where he would say, Tuesday, December 10th, tonight, this week, you know, that kind of stuff.
We would have to do the reads. I still do them, you know, but we'd have to do the reads, and it would be, you'd have to do the this Friday, tomorrow, tonight. Like, you would try and do it in one take, but I almost always wanted to do a full read. And
no. Everything.
Yeah.
I would double track all the voices so it was all tight. So I took all the pauses out, you know, and then I could put the little tinny voices in with Joe Kelly and mix it and layer it all in.
Yeah. You definitely had that, like, that breath of, like, the full gamut of using the sound and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, but that's back when people used to not do production on radio. It was all live commercials. And so when we started doing the rock tours, people would request, we want to hear that Pink Floyd commercial, you know, because it was so cool with production.
Well, there was a lot of that in Chicago radio with me growing up. Was people, you loved the commercials. Mm-hmm. Not to say you would tune out for the commercials, but like local commercials had this different charm to them. And you would hear the accent in it a little bit.
A lot of that doesn't exist anymore.
The Mr. like the jingles too and stuff like that. Like you don't.
Well, they used really to be timed the way we ran our radio stations. We used to have 300 radio stations I worked for. So literally, we would have.
So you couldn't have the accents though, but I'm just saying, like growing up.
Oh yeah,
up with
we
that
did
stuff.
Because we had the local talents. But the point is, all the music, all the jingles were timed to the music. So let's say the song starts out in the key of C. The jingle would then end in the key of C.
Oh. So there was an orchestration to the program.
Oh, yeah.
So even just the every element you were doing.
Oh, yeah. Everything was produced that way.
I wonder if anyone listening or watching right now who's never been on the radio understands what we're talking about.
It doesn't matter. We're a bunch of nerds talking about music.
I love the passion for it. When's the first time you were on the radio?
I was on the radio in 19... Well, I did an illegal radio station when I was a kid, when I was maybe 12 or 13.
Of course you did. How'd you set that up?
Well, I got my father actually helped me with that. We drove down to Texarkana, Texas, and a radio station were getting rid of their transmitter at 89.9. And so I dragged it in a car. I had four FM bays, horizontal bay antennas, and the transmitter, and I put a tower in my backyard. My father helped me, and I put on an illegal radio station.
How many watts?
Like 10, 12 watts, but it covered Milwaukee. But nobody...
You would cover the whole Milwaukee area
on 10 watts? Nobody... complained back then because it was on FM.
Oh, so FM because it was still AM days.
Yeah,
so you're like this guy. Yeah, so
nobody cared.
FM didn't really pick up until the 70s.
Oh God, no. And when I first met Joe Kelly, he was all dressed up in a suit and everything, and I thought, oh God, he's from the FCC. I'm gonna get busted. And I also had a radio station I inherited, sort of 93 QFM, which was a ethnic station at the time. Mm-hmm. And how I got into the station was. It was like an adult, you know, Henry Mancini and all that crap. And then on the weekend.
Standards. And
well, instrumentals.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. All right.
Because it would be a subcarrier for all the Century Food stores in Milwaukee. So it'd be all that beautiful music.
They had a radio. Yeah, that makes sense. Because back then you didn't even have compact disc.
The subcarrier is what was a private channel that every radio station has. That used to be a private radio channel that you could then license for Muzak and stuff like that.
It's the background stuff you hear at a store.
Elevator music, which doesn't exist anymore either. Yeah. You know?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know? That's nuts that like you think the guy who's going to be the rest of your radio career is working for the FCC. You never got caught when you were doing the pirate radio?
Oh, God,
radio?
No.
No?
No.
Never. What did you put on it?
I was all rock and roll.
You played rock records?
I was doing stuff with WOKY with Junior Achievement called Studio 68 in 1968. And Jack McCoy taught me production. And he would sit there and he would do lines of cocaine. And he'd have like all these cart machines. And he'd sit there and go, tonight on the last contest, ding, bam. And he would, it was that kind of top 40 radio because it was a number one radio station, you know. And then they dragged me down here to see the Beatles because we were supposed to interview them. Bob Berry was the disc jockey. Mm-hmm. And I had a Nagra tape deck and a shotgun mic. And I was good. But we never did because we were backstage for the Beatles at the Coliseum or whatever it was here, and this is
Chicago Stadium, or
it was an indoor dump.
Okay, all right.
And it had no sound system, and we were sort of backstage, and there are all these curtains, and all it was screaming girls. You couldn't hear anything. And then the Beatles came off stage, and they handed me a bunch of drumsticks and walked right past. And that's as close as we got to them. Didn't hear a damn thing. And Bob was pissed off because he was supposed to get an interview.
Yeah, big, this is a big interview then.
Yeah.
And people cared about an interview like that.
Back
because
then.
It was Beatlemania, right?
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
Was that the first tour they did, or like one of the first
few? Yeah, that
few?
Was the beginning, yeah.
They didn't tour that much.
No, no.
When people talk about how big the Beatles were, they didn't tour a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, it was all the promotions they got.
True.
And back then, radio was just hyping them, you know, really well.
Playing them like crazy,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could still, I think you could still launch a radio station right now and just play Beatles.
Yeah.
And like, whenever a station flips and like, all right, well, until we figure out the new format, we're going to have a whole day of this or something. And Beatles,
well, we used
Beatles
to do
is like one of those like 10, 20 bands people
right, that's what we used to do for the radio stations when we took them over. Because we were some of the, Joe Kelly and I were the first to break the Union. So it was the old Union studio. So yeah. We set them up as a combo studio.
You would do, when you would do the flips, I mean, you tell me about this before. Someone would buy a station.
Right.
They would flip the format. You guys would come in and just set up the station, give it to them, and then they would run.
Well, we were consultants. So yeah. We literally.
Like a consulting firm, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we'd go in the night before, get the whole staff drunk and partied up and find out all the dirt about the radio station. I remember one of the chief engineers was telling me, if they ever wanted to get rid of me, I would have this station off the air for 6 months because I just go in there and short out the transmitter. Oh, really? Oh, okay. Anyhow, those were the days of Joe Kelly.
When does JBTV... I didn't know if I was interviewing you or you're interviewing me.
We're together. Right, we're doing
when
this
did
as
you
fun.
Start? You started JBTV when?
1984. Yeah.
And that's when music videos are blowing up.
Well, yeah, because MTV started, and we were doing commercials, TV commercials. So I would get 1-inch tape decks or 2-inch quad videotape from all these different record companies with all these different videos. They were comp reels.
And these were a way to like sell.
They want
play our song on the record. Here's what the band looks like.
Well, yeah. The thing was, we're going to put your artist on our TV commercial.
Oh, okay.
So that meant a lot for the radio stations and for the artists because they would spend. They would do trades, is what it was.
All right.
So like the TV station would trade to do spots on the radio, and then they would, you know. So it was like a good thing,
especially back in the 70s, 80s. There was a ton of like TV radio spots like that, like crazy.
Oh, they were everywhere.
Yeah.
We used to do stuff for the loop. For the XRT.
The classic loop video with the heavier set guy dancing the brick wall.
Well, that wasn't like one of ours, but we did those spots.
People think of those and like the hits of today.
That was an outtake too, you know.
It was an outtake.
Yeah.
And then they used that for like every rock station across the country. They would just take the loop's logo out of it and put another.
Well,
rock
that's what we would do.
Yeah.
We were the main company that did that, you know.
What were the big spots that you guys ran, like for rock stations? And
you name it.
And you were still doing the radio consulting thing then.
Yeah, that was Joe Kelly though. He did all that. I was the production guy.
You were the production guy.
So I'd be the one that would travel with him, thinking, you know, it ruined my marriage. Because, right. You know, Joe would call me on, I'd say to, you know, my wife, and I go, I got the weekend off. This is great. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes later, Joe would call, we got the Pink Floyd tour. We're going to San Francisco now.
And then you just go film stuff for Pink Floyd and stuff like
Well,
that?
We would be part of the tour. We would be there with the KFRC, 610 KFRC, mm-hmm. did stuff with them. Mm-hmm. So we were putting the production and stuff together for it. So we would go on tour, stay at the big hotel while the band is in a crappy place.
Did you like that part of the business of like jumping around?
I didn't like traveling. I don't like traveling
no.
at all. It's,
every time I talk to you, you're like, if I'm going to go somewhere, I'm going to be shooting something. I don't want to go and just... Like,
yeah.
Because you've seen it all.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe for me, I haven't seen it all. Or maybe because I was stuck inside for 2 years and I'm anxious and I get anxiety. And then also performing and doing stand-up comedy stuff. Like, I want to get on the road. I want to go and see stuff. But you're over it. You've seen it all.
Well, it was just grueling, you know.
What was the last great concert you saw? Like, when you were... Like, before you got jaded to
it. Well, we always saw, like, 10 minutes of it.
Oh, yeah, true.
It's like we would be backstage, which sucks.
Yeah.
So you would never see anything. So we'd be at the Fillmore and stuff like that. And then, you know, we would do one or two things with, you know, Bill Graham or whatever. And then that was... And then I'd be at the radio station doing production. Because I'd fly in, you know. I would set up and go, the station sounds bad. I'd tweak their... they're processing. Mm-hmm. So at the stations back then, our stations were like loud, legally, you know,
legally loud.
Yeah. Which is nobody cares about anymore. Everybody sounds the same. Remember, you grew up in Chicago, right? Remember how WLS and Super CFL sounded different?
Big.
Without even knowing?
Yes.
They don't do that anymore.
And they, you would hear the reverbs, you would hear the highs and the lows and the bass ends.
Every station had their own sound. Yeah. And that was what made radio great. And we also used to speed up the music just a little.
Just a little?
Yeah.
What difference would that make?
Well, because when you'd hear the same song a little slower on a competitive radio station, it sounded dull.
It sounded dull? All right, I could see that.
Yeah,
that's such a little clever thing that I don't even know. I've been doing this half my adult life. I didn't even think of that.
Well, it was easy to do on the turntables. You could adjust the speed just a little bit.
When the music videos come in and like everyone says that changes the game. Now it's just kind of obviously. There's like people that obviously have to do that. Like now, how much does music videos change everything?
Well, I don't think, because I always wanted to do video. Whenever I did audio, I saw a video in my head.
Because you were like wanting to make a TV commercial out of it or something.
Yeah. Even when I was doing radio at the beginning, I always wanted to do TV. TV was my first love.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And radio was just an easier way to get to television.
It was easy. It's the only way I could start in the business.
True. It's not a visual. You don't have to be attractive. Like, you can tell. I'm not the hottest man. That was one thing I went with radio. I was like, I don't want to be hot. You know, I thought, but I don't like my teeth. I don't like this. I can hide it behind the microphone. What do you mean here I'm attractive? What are you talking about, listener? You know? But now it doesn't matter. Now if you're on the radio, everyone's going to see you anyway with social media and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There was that, like, era of, like, the conversion to music video, and there was this, like, weird, like, you have to be this, or you have, and they're always that. They never went away. Like, there's people now that are like just social media sensations more than they are.
But you still like to see when you're on, going through, you want to see a video of the band.
I do, and maybe that's just the generation I grew up. But now there's some people that are like, well, do music videos matter anymore? And there's a lyric video now. You see bands doing that now where they'll put out a lyric video, which I think is fine. I think especially with YouTube or the way things are digitally, you could put out as many different versions of it you want. Mm-hmm. But then you hear bands are like, oh, I'm going to put out my album now because there's no physical media. There is. You can buy it if you want to be a collector. People still buy vinyl and love it. But I mean, Kanye West did like 8 different versions of his album before it came out. That's kind of like, no, what's the album? Like, what is it when it comes out? And it's also a singles business.
Well, people don't listen to albums anymore.
No, there's no, you know, there's bands, EPs and like nonlinear stuff.
Yeah, the
like
bands that have spent so much time making their album. Like, it flows together, and this song has to be here. They spend days, weeks, months thinking about the order. Mm-hmm. Then they keep changing it because they want to.
The attention span breaks down even further. Yeah. You know, and like now it's like. And now I find myself, even me doing radio, I'm so like, oh, there's some bands where I really only know them from the hits.
Yeah.
And I feel weird saying that. But then there's other bands like, oh, no, I know the whole album, or I love the whole thing about them. And oh, I get caught up with it. Then I talk to my my nephew who's a teenager. He's like, I just like these 3 songs by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And or I like them because they're in a commercial, or I like them because they're in a TikTok video, or they went viral.
And then when they go to the concert, if they don't do those songs, because, you know, some bands don't like to do their older stuff, you know, it's always about got to be the new stuff, you know.
Or now you have people that, especially through socials or a movie now, like Metallica, for example, Master of Puppets. Mm-hmm. Okay, so like it's in Stranger Things. It's in this new, very hip show.
Oh, I've seen it, yeah.
Which the new season is very, very, I think it's a good show.
The Upside Down.
The Upside Down, and there's some Midwestern stuff.
I could turn us upside down if you want.
Doing so like they use Master of Puppets in it, and then it's on the charts again.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're playing it again at rock radio. Mind you, we're playing Metallica, but like Master is a very hard, thrashier song.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like everyone says Metallica sold out. No, they certainly matured their sound. It became more produced, but they've obviously gone and done whatever they want. They're Metallica. They can make whatever album they want.
Well, I saw them at Lollapalooza, and I thought they were great.
Incredible.
Yeah.
You know?
And they brought their own video, if you notice.
Their video production, that was incredible.
And they had these wire cams, 2 wire cams, and I'm going, because it was on Hulu, mm-hmm. so I'm watching it and going, this is like the best TV production I've seen in years.
And it was live.
Yes.
So live cuts and everything like that, yeah.
But it was their crew doing it.
Which is incredible.
So they knew the music.
So they invest so much into what they do. I'll say, people talk crap about Metallica in retrospect because of the Napster stuff and all they, but if you look at it, like, there's so many bands that lost money on that. There's mm-hmm. so many bands that, like, that no one will ever know that have come and gone in the last 20 years that didn't get to like really get their feet in or anything because no one's buying music the same way. It's mm-hmm. a subscription model. Metallica is one of those bands that made their money when people bought records.
Right.
And they've lost a lot of money in putting on them. They had to put on music festivals. They made movies. They've lost money on some things. But then mm-hmm. you look at like what they put it back into the show. I will always admire that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And like they keep their production larger than life so that if you've seen this band before, you're going to see them bigger. If it's the first time you've seen them, it's going to be the biggest show you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And now you have like these kids that are like, I'm goofing around about it on the radio recently. I'm introing Master of Puppets like it's a new song.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm goofing and calling the band Metallica. I heard about this band called Metallica on the Stranger Things show.
You're so educated there.
I know for you young kids, you know about this band called Metallica. Like, and I would, it's... It's ridiculous to say it, but I mean, like, it's kind of fun that when there's this big trend now, you see this too, where it's someone who's 15 or 16 reacts to something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so and so, hip hop head, reacts to Rage Against the Machine for the first time. And that people, like, lose their mind, and it's people watching other. And I was like, oh, if this is me aging, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm okay with watching the joy of music in people and stuff like that. Do you get a kick out of it when you see, like, someone discover something new for the first time?
Oh, yeah. All the old is becoming new again.
Yeah.
And all the music. There was a time back when radio only played, we're only this format. You can't play this because, yeah. you know, even it could be the right band, but if it's a little too heavy or too soft, no, we're not getting into it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially with the pop stuff now, but I mean, like another thing is another Stranger Things thing, mm-hmm. right, is Kate Bush running up the hill, which was an alternative song when it came out. That was not a pop song. And you had that in the 80s, like when you were
Well, I interviewed her in New York.
Yeah.
And
when you interview her, she was an alternative artist. She wasn't considered like a pop singer.
She didn't get me, though.
She didn't get you?
No. We were at the... I was like a sellout, it sounded like. We recorded at the Sony Studios where MTV does their stuff. Yeah. And I had the MTV camera people. And they're doing all this crap with the cameras. And I'm like spending more time looking at what they're doing. I'm going, this is not what JBTV is.
Yeah. You're like, it's simple. Like, it was a
but that was the Red Shoes thing that she put out.
What was it? What was that?
The Red Shoes. She did a little short, couple of short films and mm-hmm. stuff. And so, but she was great, you know. But again, I don't do normal interviews, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that's the way I've always tried to play my TV thing, you know, because I'm not. I met Phil Donahue at the Summerfest in Milwaukee, and
those were things
at Summer the beginning, Fest, yeah. the early Summerfest back when it was down by the art museum there.
Oh no, because they used to have it on the shore forever, right?
Or yeah,
they've had it for the majority
in the same
of the time.
Area, but more toward the north there.
Okay,
and the first and second year we were there, I had the radio station there, and I actually did 24 hours. I was on for 7 days live. 24 hours doing a show.
Oh.
And I never even got like any publicity for it because I just did it, you know. And then Bob Reitman, who joined the radio station after, he was the progressive rock at what station was that? I was going to say XRT, but it's not XRT, it's Chicago. WZMF in Menominee Falls. Mm-hmm. And so I was like helping him with engineering, and he was the old progressive rock guy.
Oh.
So Dylan would end, and he'd fade it down, and then it'd be like 3 seconds of dead air. Then you'd hear the studio mic go, because he turns it up, and then he goes, WZMF Menominee Falls with Bob Reitman. And I'm going, Bob, why don't you like turn your mic on during the record right at the end and sort of keep it tighter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Write it out, man.
He ended up being on KTI, which was a top 40 station then. So
I love how the rock guys are always like a little bit more technical and a little bit more like on these things, but then there's stuff that the pop people will do that we'll never understand or we just won't appreciate.
Yeah.
Which is probably, maybe that's a good thing though too. But yeah, but no, Kate Bush is a big song too.
Yeah,
That song's big again. Like my niece knows that song. And I was like, how would you ever find this? And now I think with the way people get introduced things through music, and then there's people like who are listening to radio, they're like, oh, this is neat. Mm-hmm. This is cool that I don't have to go and like have an algorithm. There's a human element that's
remember
actually
Ken Nordine?
No,
he did all those voice things, you know, like all kinds of theatrical voice, like he'd do like mind trips with audio and It was
Chicago
all,
radio, right?
Yeah, yeah. He was around.
That FMT or
something like that, you know. Yeah, and Dr. Demento is another.
Oh, Dr. Demento is like a formative thing in my youth.
Yeah.
I remember that was a big deal. My dad would tape those, and I would get the cassettes of it because I couldn't stay up late enough to get it, right? Uh-huh. And I remember like really, really loving that.
But
I remember Sunday nights was all about was Wild Chicago, mm-hmm, on Channel 11, which,
well,
is
Ben Hollis, I'm done. Ben's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And
of course you know Ben Hollis. Of course you
I want to do a show with him called Ben and Jerry.
Jerry and Ben, just to avoid the
trailer. No.
You can get your names. You can get away with it,
it's
right?
Ben Hollis and Jerry Bryant.
Hey, there you go.
Ben
your
and
names.
Jerry.
There you go.
Now, it'd be nice if Ben and Jerry would sponsor it because I love their chocolate chip.
This is great.
Cookie dough ice cream.
Come on. Tonight, American Cone Dream, dude. That's my favorite.
Oh, yeah. So between the two of us, there you go.
But no, it was Wild Chicago and then Dr. Demento. And I mean, because Dr. Demento, the musical parody comedy show out of L.A., mm-hmm, was a big deal and introduced everyone to Weird Al and everything like that. I remember that was a big deal. That was a big comedy thing, too. It was, yeah. Weekends were all about me.
You remember there was this stuff. Radio guy that did, he sounded like, who was it? I'm trying to think. Like the Elliot Ness shows, The Untouchables, the voiceover guy that was on there.
Oh.
Elliot Ness and The Untouchables. And
oh, broadcaster.
Yeah, so what they would do is, they would do things with today's hits.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, and so-and-so did this. They didn't hear a little hook of a song to back it up. None of that is happening anymore.
No, none of it. I it's weird because with me, with what I'm doing now, I'm recording the tracks. I can play a little bit and I can use, I enjoy, the weird thing is like nostalgia is a big thing now. And radio understands it too. And it's smart. It's why a song comes on the radio, it gives you emotion and it tells a story, mm-hmm, and you connect yourself to the sentiment of it. We're doing a 90s hour. And it's
90s at 9.
90s nooner.
Oh, right? 90s at nooner.
So instead of it just being like, oh, yeah, we're going to play 90s rock, my thing is it's like it's the sentiment of where you are in those times. So I'm playing clips from movies. I'm playing clips from commercials. I'm making fun of them. I remember I found like every time I find the big thing is cringe now. Everything seems kind of cringy when you see it, like, oh, how old and dated it looks. But at the time, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's the way it's supposed to look, right? Yeah. But everything was like a sexy thing in the 90s. You would sell sex sells, right?
Yeah.
And it was a Taco Bell commercial, and there was this lady who was like singing over awful saxophone stuff, and it's like the sensation of this burrito that costs 99 cents, and then it was like, oh my god, that's so expensive, like, and you're just laughing at all these things, and I'm watching, and I was like, I'm just trying to find 90s stuff, and I'm like, no, this is the bit.
Well, we used to joke
the bit is this, the bit is this, and I just rip it, put it up, cut it up, and I have it on air in 30 minutes, 20 minutes, you know, less than that.
Yeah, it's a crazy world we live in.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's weird that I'm making fun of commercials while modern day commercials are like minutes away from playing.
I know, but the modern day commercials are dull.
You think so?
Oh, I don't think they're any good. You know,
there's some that are clever, like the radio ones or the TV.
Well, the radio I think are even awful, especially when they do the fast paced stuff at the end. You know,
there's no way that sounds ever good.
No,
never. I'd rather do a live read. You know, another thing is like doing the people smaller market, smaller town, right? I guess maybe they have a longer attention span or something like that. I'm not saying they don't.
But a lot of commercials don't even have production anymore.
But now
it's just
when I do a commercial, I read for a concert or something like that coming up. And there's a band, Paralandra, really, really great band. They're coming into town and we're doing a show with them. And I get all the information. And I was like, all right, so how soon do you need this? I'm thinking of where I came from now. I'm thinking less than 30. They're like, you want to go 40 or 50 seconds? I was like, 40 or 50 seconds to promote a concert? Like, sounds astonishingly crazy to me because I think of how short the attention spans are.
Well,
but then I'm also like,
60s.
Oh, you want me to just do, like, listen to the band. How do you want to sell them? Go ahead and do it.
Well, the way I would do it is I would take three or four songs as little hooks, and then I'd put little voice tracks in between.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're like, go ahead and say it how you want to do it. And in terms of me just being a DJ on air and a personality and a host, I was like, that's great. I get to like listen to the bands, take what I like from it, and then share with the audience. And there's just this kind of refreshing back to basics.
See, that's good. You're in a market. You can do that.
Yeah.
That's,
and I'm like, there's things they're like, no, we want more of this or less of that. And I like that, mm-hmm, you know? But also like Q101, we were already that for sure.
Yeah.
Especially in comparison to Chicago radio, because alternative and rock radio, I think, maybe because it's mostly all that I did, right? I can say I'm in that bubble, right? We didn't have this
there wasn't like this foolish sense that we didn't understand what was going on with. There was this meta sense of like, we know we're the radio, we know we're playing songs that we think are repetitive. Especially at Q101, we were like a bunch of smartasses all the time. You know, like I remember I was doing. There are some things like we would be funny and ridiculous and voices and stuff like that, and I would try it. And if no one told me to stop doing it, I would just keep doing it.
Uh-huh.
And it was weird because I was like, because
well, you worked with Mancow, correct?
I worked down the hall from Mancow.
Down the hall, okay.
From him, and I wasn't with Mancow at his time when he was mornings in Q101.
Uh-huh.
He was at the final days of the Loop. The company I was with owned the Loop. They were down the hall, and I was. I think I was an intern for Q101 in the mid-2000s when Mancow was still the morning show. But I was never like directly involved with him or anything like that.
Yeah.
Which and he—that's a tornado to work for. No, I'm not talking crap about Mancow.
Oh, like, no,
that's just a whole other. That's just a whole
shock
other
beast. Radio, which doesn't really exist anymore. Like
no,
that,
but it was a product of its time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was definitely a product of its time. And
I always thought shock radio should be real if you're going to do it versus everything being fake. You know,
true.
Everything's sort of made up. There's enough real stuff that's cool,
or at least it should be vetted in some form of real.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something I can be a fan of playing up a real, especially being a DJ, like, or being a comedian too, taking a real emotion and just turning the volume all the way up.
Yeah.
And this is me being a pro wrestling fan. That's the fake part, right? Is now taking something real and just maybe producing it.
When did the pro wrestling start? Because I always thought of you being on the radio and doing comedy shows and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden, pro wrestling.
I've been around it a long, long time. So I'm doing college radio in the mid-2000s. Podcasting is like new, you know? But then you start to see everything get super subjective. And I thought wrestling was always, it's always been big. It's a huge cable. It's whatever anyone wants to say, it's a billion-dollar business. Mm-hmm. It's the lifeblood of cable television, you know? Yeah. WTBS, the Superstation, USA Network, they were built on wrestling.
And the fans.
And the fans. Know? It's a diehard audience that will always be there and watch it, and they're invested in it.
Yeah, we met Hulk Hogan, and he's still down to earth, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when I was a little kid, I came up to the Hulkster and I said, you know, when I was a little kid, and the Sheik had you down, and you broke that camel clutch, I was there with you. I was with you, arm in arm, hand in hand, all the way, brother. He was.
Thanks a lot there, brother. It's little Hulksters like you that I did it for.
Push up prayers and the vitamins.
And then he patted me on the back and it hurt.
So then I was doing a show with them, and it was just friends of mine at the college radio station. We said, like, this podcasting thing, like, if we do a show about this first, we did it on the website just at first because they're like, we're not going to put you on air with that. And mind you, we put it on air and it became the biggest thing on the radio station. On a small college radio station, WXAV. Yeah, yeah. Shout out Pete. And so we did it, and it got really popular. And then there was a wrestling promotion called Ring of Honor, which is started all these big careers for people. And they were kind of like the AAA, right? Ring of Honor was like big and popular. They would draw like 1,500 people, which is healthy, but not like a WWE number. But a lot of their guys went on to WWE. So it was like college football, basically. And they would run about a mile and a half away from where St. Xavier University was. And we were a 150-watt radio station. Where we had one 60-second block an hour where we could run community involvement things.
Right.
Not a commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you go to a bunch of college kids and you give college kids a stack of tickets for their show, mind you, papering, but they're still going to sell like 1,500 tickets or something like that. But if we help them do that, here are your tickets, here are the show. We come four times a year. Here you go. We're going to give you X amount of interviews. And then the next 2 years of our college career was – we got to interview all these wrestlers who go on to be like stadium headliners.
So that was
like
the thing with the radio. Like,
yeah, there was a show called Rumble Radio, and we got it going as a podcast, and it built up.
So you would talk to the wrestlers.
Yeah, we would interview them, but we would cover it like sports talk radio. No different than what you would hear on The Score or ESPN or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And also, like, we would, we don't like this storyline or anything like that. It was very nerdy, but now that's the whole internet. Now anyone can get on a camera and do that. And now I'm doing it with a company called Sportskeeda, which is out of India, and it's a huge website. It's one of the biggest wrestling websites in the world, and they have this massive SEO team and all these different things, and I shoot wrestling videos at my place, and I go to this year I went to four WWE interviewing their talent. I got to go to the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and interview people at my house. And then in Chicago, the top independent promotion called AAW runs Logan Square Auditorium. It's almost like now I'm like a host. I'm on camera for them and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
So, and I help produce the show a little bit too and stuff like that too.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's fun. It's weird. It's like I'm doing all these things I wanted to do in college, and then I, like anytime I get mad about it or I'm like, no, my jobs are sitting in my house talking about rock records, watching wrestling, talking about wrestling, and then I'm paying my rent with it. And then there's the days I'm like, oh man, I'm worried about this or that, or I'm not where I want to be. And then I have to keep poking myself and be like, Kevin, when you're mad about that, afterwards you're gonna go tell jokes at night.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to keep telling myself that. Like every day I get, if I get mad about something, like even if I have to go get a normal job, I'm not gonna like it as
no,
much
as not
like
at all.
This. I'm not gonna. Is there ever been a point where you're like, oh, I gotta go get, I have to not do the TV thing or the radio thing?
Well,
or
I don't know. I've never made money at JBTV, so.
But I mean, it's always
out,
been your passion, you know. Though. You know,
well,
like yeah,
that's the only thing you should do. I think that's the only reason I've recovered from stage four colon and lung cancer.
Because you had passions in life.
Yeah. Yeah, I would go from chemotherapy to the studio, either doing a comedy show with mm-hmm. you or yeah. having a band come by or something, and. And I would always be running and doing stuff, you know.
And that was amazing. We were in the thick of it because we bring up some things, context for people. Q101, KQX, we would tape bands with you guys at the mm-hmm. old studio. And I would come in and do like the warm-ups and different things for that. And I remember like you were going through some of the cancer treatment. People were like, how is he doing this? Because you were like, still like running around and filming everything.
Yeah, I never gave up. And
but it didn't – if someone didn't know you had cancer, they would just know like, oh, he seems like he's a little off.
People
– you were still like 100% involved in everything.
Yeah, yeah. And people would make fun of it like, yeah, you got cancer. Yeah, right. You know? Yeah,
they didn't believe
I do.
It. They didn't believe it.
They gave me 30 to 60 days to live. I can't believe I'm still here.
You know? Well, you give me a 30 to 60. You're like old Catskills comedian.
But I can tell you, I have a lot of jokes about cancer, sure. You know, that you get. And I always kept a sense of humor, too.
Yeah, you
know?
Have to.
Yeah, and if you don't stay positive at whatever you're doing, why do it? Life's
too
short.
Well, I mean, you can talk about the darkness of everything. I see that with comedy, but you have to be able to joke about mm-hmm. it.
So are there going to be any comics that are wrestlers at the same time?
Well, like that are truly like funny guys and stuff.
Well,
like that
would be like part of the wrestling routine.
Yeah, they have a routine in the ring and stuff like that.
But it would be funny stuff.
There's a lot of guys who can do that now on what you call the independent circuit, the world that I'm in with AAW, where we have some real awesome athletes that are doing incredible things. Mm-hmm. But then you have a guy who comes in with a goofy gimmick or a character and a theme song that people like and. That guy sells a bunch of t-shirts at the show, and it's still a punk rock thing. So you some of those guys tend to be like a fun, attractive act and different stuff like that too. And there's plenty of guys I know that now have gone on to major television. There's a guy named, I don't know him well, I haven't worked a show with him, a guy named Orange Cassidy with All Elite Wrestling, which is on TNT, major big time company, number two company in the world. And his gimmick is he just doesn't care.
Yeah,
like he just comes in, he wears sunglasses and he'll like punch you a little bit. And mind you, he'll get into the match and he'll really start going and wrestling with people. But like he comes off like Paul Rudd's character in Wet Hot American Summer where he's like supposed to like clean that up. And he like, oh, do I have to? Fine, you know? And
do I have
so,
to tell another joke?
Yeah,
what is this crap? Right.
But he like doesn't even say anything. He has sunglasses on. So if he gets fired up, he throws the sunglasses at you. And it's so... It sounds so ridiculous, but it's so simply done, and that's the one thing I like about wrestling too. And like comedy is the reaction. If you're getting a reaction, you know it, you feel it. The people are your orchestra, and you play them as reaction. It's really really fun to see.
Wow,
really really fun to see.
Wow. Talk about your comedy routines.
Oh, sure.
What are you doing
sure.
with comedy?
So I'm doing this new show that's not newer, but it's tied to roast battling. You ever seen roast battling before? Mm-mm. There was a roast battle show on Comedy Central a few years ago. Jeff Ross was
involved. Okay, where they would roast the different...
Yeah. But it would be comedians competing, and they would go joke for joke.
Oh, okay.
And then a panel of judges would pick who wins. Were
these ad-lib jokes? Or
No, you're writing for it.
Oh, okay.
But you're writing for the person. So it'd be like you and I going back and forth. Mm-hmm. It started at the Comedy Store as a live show and evolved into something that ran for about four seasons on Comedy Central. And I know they did a division of it over in the UK as well. But it still, even though it's not on TV, it's very much a viral video sensation thing now. And I got connected with two great comedians, Matt Bamwart and Chris Grieco, at the Lincoln Lodge. Independent comedy club. Great. Venue, and they're open to doing different things, and this was something that was out of the box, and they started doing a show called Sticks and Stones, and now it's Roast Battle Chicago. It is in the league with the Roast Battle in LA and the Roast Battle in New York City and in London, and we're in a global league, and we have our own champions and everything, and I've been involved with them for a couple months, and it's like we put up a clip and 1.3 million people see it, or 40,000 people watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone has a take on who won and like all these different things. And it's very, very fun doing comedy for a couple of years. And you think you're just going to wallow in obscurity. You're just going to do it. It's going to be fun. You're doing it because you love it. But is anyone going to see this stuff? And even if they don't see me, I want them to see the show I'm helping to produce or build up. Like when we were working on something as well.
Yeah.
So we're doing it and we're like, wow. So then Jeff Ross, the Roastmaster General, he's roasted Donald Trump and Bruce Willis and all those big Comedy Central roasts. And he's one of like the top probably 100 comedians of all time. If you want to have a list, he's on that list.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, hey, he's coming to town. Can we get an interview with him? Because we're launching a companion podcast with it as well. You guys can get the podcast. It's on Spotify. It's on, search for us on YouTube. You want to watch stuff on YouTube, search Roast Battle Chicago. So we have full battles up and everything like that. So we're kind of like the league people on our layer, are like impressed by it, like the numbers we're doing and everything. Like we go to them and we're like, hey, can we get an interview with him? We know he's going to be playing the Improv in Schaumburg. We have a show on this date. We know he's going to be in town for a show that night. We're not, we know we can't get him to come and do our show, but it'd be great if we could go and do an interview with him and you know, show him some of our clips and he like roasts our guys and stuff. The word we get back is, no, he'll do the show.
Uh-huh.
He'll come and do your show.
Oh, cool.
So he came and he judged and he was on panel. But part of it is he's in town doing his own show, so you can't advertise it. It's the walk-in, you know?
Yeah.
So word gets out that some people start to know. And and then I guess Jeff says it himself on stage at his show in Schaumburg at the Improv. We're in Chicago on Milwaukee Avenue. And we push our show back by 2 hours, and we're normally at 8. So everyone's like, why is your show later? And they're like, is something going on? And I was kind of – people are asking me. And then eventually the day of the show, we have everyone like an hour back before the show back. He's like, listen, guys, Jeff Ross is going to be on the show. And they're like – because they're just like competing with each other already. They're writing jokes that you're really only going to tell probably once.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to like develop your act, but like it's almost like you're writing a monologue, like a late night monologue. You're going to compete and diss somebody. So, and I've hosted the show and produced the show, but I've never battled on it, and I'm not really in the position. And this show, like, no, we need you to battle on the show, but I didn't know Jeff Ross was going to be on the show at that point. And then we get Jeff Ross, and I'm like, oh wait, I'm going to have to battle in front of Jeff Ross. So that clip will be out at some point. Hopefully by the time we see this, but you'll be able to see it on YouTube, and maybe we get some stuff on television, stuff like that too. But full battles are up on YouTube. Really, really funny stuff. Very, very fun. It has this like Fight Club feel to it that's like really, really cool. We're going to be at the Comedy Bar in Dubuque for a weekend in January coming up. And if you're a social person, you're on Facebook, Instagram.
So you tape those shows?
Yeah, we tape the whole shows. And I mean, simple production, but I mean, like, the clips are huge. Like, the clips do really, really well. Like, thousands and thousands of viewers on each one. It's not massive, but it's like there's a couple that have like a million, you know, and like a TikTok that has like 1.3 million or a couple that have like 100,000. You're like, oh, wow, you know?
Yeah.
And we film some stuff now. We're like, we know that's going to go viral. And there's some – now the weird thing is people will only watch the 20-second like Instagram reel or something like that. And they'll be like, this person won. But over on YouTube, we can put up the whole thing. And – no, the person you in the comment you said that one was like, go watch the whole thing. So if you want to watch comedians insult each other competitively, check out Roast Battle Chicago. You don't have to be from Chicago. It isn't super Chicago centric. There's some Chicago references in there, but it's very much a super competitive show. I think it's one of the coolest things I've done with comedy. It's so fun because also everyone thinks these people really don't like each other. No, that's the joy. You roast the people you love, and I really, really love it. It's so much fun to produce it, and the reactions are visceral. It's visceral, and it's red meat comedy, man. It's really, really good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Of all the comedy shows we did anybody become famous?
Sure. So you and I, in 2015, filmed a show called 4-Star Stand-Ups. We are trying to find a way to repurpose that footage.
I know I got the footage. I licensed it to – I digitized all that stuff. And I don't know whatever happened with any of it. It's such a –
well, there's plenty of people that got great careers out of it. Chris Redd did the show, and then he just wrapped up a 5-year run on Saturday Night Live. That was super successful for him. And a very, very sweet guy. I remember he was I think we were all thinking he was going to get SNL at the time. And so when we shot it, I was like, I don't think he's going to say yes, but I'll ask him. And he said, yeah, I'll do it. He's like, you guys are trying to get a TV show in Chicago. Let me try it. It'll help you guys. And it was, he definitely understood it was more beneficial to us for him to do that. Josh Johnson did the show, and Josh had a really, really great set and was already touring comedian at the time. He went on to write for The Tonight Show. I think he just did a Netflix special. So he blew up. He blew up super, super huge. Rena Kalm did the show, and she's very successful in touring now and going around the country and makes her living at comedy. The weird thing is you would have some people that reach out to me like, is there any way you can get the clips down or just like privatize them? Because I lost weight, or I don't do that material anymore. it's weird because like they're like, I feel bad asking you to get it out, because it was like, all right, a lot of years have come, but I was like, if we're gonna put the footage out, we're gonna go to you, we're gonna ask you what you want us to do, and like, so there's some people we're talking to about potentially doing that stuff with, but there's a couple of comics. Jeff Sheen, who did the show, just did the Late Late Show on CBS.
Wow,
and super successful. Laura Bites did the show. And Lara was blown up at the time, and Lara did she's going to headline Zanies. Mm-hmm. She just did Joe Rogan Experience. She did Comedy Central. And so it's kind of crazy. You know, because the idea of the show was like, there's so many really, really funny people in Chicago, and we don't have the industry. The industry isn't here. You would see this with bands, too. It's like, well, you got to go to L.A. or New York to break your band.
Yeah.
You really. And I always thought that was so stupid. And it's so like, you're cutting off the whole center of the country because you say, well, you have to come to us.
Yeah.
It's so that holy, that chip on our shoulder that people have from Chicago, and that ball busting while also being polite is something I never want to let go of.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I move to another part, I never want to not feel like I'm a person from Chicago. And that's kind of the element of the show that I thought we could hopefully syndicate and get on television and show to a bigger audience. And there was also like great showcase comedy shows like Premium Blend in the 90s, where you weren't getting like one comedian. The HBO, a new comedian special they would do every year, and it would be like a showcase. I wanted the great show you would see at a club like Zany's or Laugh Factory reproduced for television. That's the
well, that's the way I like to set up the studio when I did that. Yeah,
and those were so much fun to do.
Yeah,
and I obviously got away from us and things happened, whatever. But I mean, I remember that was, I was so happy that we just got to do it. I was so grateful that you get that, like you gave me that opportunity. It was so much fun, and I'm a pretty good comedian.
Well, I think
I'm a better comedian now.
Yeah,
hopefully I am. and there's probably some stuff that I shot then that I would, because I had hair then too. That was I had hair. I was probably like 20.
You look good
lighter
this way though.
I know. I feel so much better.
Yeah.
Buzzing my hair. I think by the end of it, I buzzed my hair. We shot 11 episodes and we had 8 cameras and I had the one bald spot. And so I would move around and I remember coming back into the main mixing, and I remember you would mix it live. You would do the whole cut like while we were doing it, but I would catch myself, and we have like multiple cameras right now.
No, I edited those shows.
Yeah, I know, but when we were I would see my bald spot. I remember like after we shot like 8 of them, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna buzz the hair. And I went to our producer at the time, Thomas. I was like, so give up, cut my hair. He's like, only for the last one.
Oh.
Don't do it too soon. Like try and keep it for most of these. You can do it for the last one. I remember him telling me that.
Yeah, and I remember Chris was there helping us through all that.
Oh, God bless Chris, man.
Yeah.
God bless Chris. And there was a lot of people who contributed their time. And like, it was kind of like people were volunteering their time to shoot like a really well-produced TV show. And all the comics did that too. They're like, I'm going to give you my core material and see what you do with
it. Well, they seem to appreciate it.
But also like people use the footage to go and get themselves booked. And like there's people that got and made money from that and got themselves down the road and got gas in the tank and got to the next town. And you may be thinking yourself, oh, these aren't huge comedians. But no, these are now – there's many people who are working comedians, and this is
– How's Farting Marty doing?
Farting Marty is doing – Martin Murrow. Martin's doing some commercials. I think he's been in a handful of commercials. Farting Marty was pretty ridiculous as well. And there's a lot of the people I still do comedy shows with now. Michael Keefe is running Best Night Ever at Lincoln Lodge. He's one of my best friends, and – We'll bring it up from time to time and talk about it. And there's a lot of people. Dave Phillips is – there's some people who don't even do – who do a lot less comedy. And like they'll tell me like, if I don't do comedy, I still did that. Even if we even though we still shot it, it was still really cool. Because it was like we're shooting clips now on our phones. And mind you, 2015, you could do that. But you still wanted something to come with a camera and shoot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was one thing – it's one thing to shoot something on your phone, right? Anybody can do that now. It's another thing to be in like 8 cameras in HD.
Well, I love that.
We were on the same stage at like Panic at the Disco and like Foster the People and like all these BTS like performed. And I was like, what are we – Like the whole time, I'm like, "What are we doing here?"
Oh,
like,
I love doing it. I love the putting it all together and doing those shows.
But you know? Were you already the material? It wasn't like the comics weren't ready to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, so when we shot it, it just felt, even though we were doing it for like 80 people in a soundstage, it felt like we were. Like it was perfect.
Well, I made it look like a club. I didn't want it to look like a TV studio, because TV studios are very bland, you know.
Yeah.
They may have the set, but then around the at when you look at it, it's like we're in a TV studio. You know?
And we wanted it to have a little bit of the club vibe too, though.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
You know, and you got people a little bit liquored up, not too liquored up.
Yeah, yeah.
And we didn't want them too liquored up, you know, because it's still like 80 people, and someone's if their laugh is out of key with everything, we gotta like yank somebody and be like, "We're gonna put you in this room and have you watch on a TV camera." You know? Uh-huh. But I remember like after a while, we're like, "Oh, this may not get on TV," but I was like, "If the coolest thing I ever did was like." Film a TV show that didn't get out. I still filmed a TV show. I did it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so there is that bittersweet feeling about it, but I do appreciate it. I was so grateful to you and everybody that contributed to it.
Yeah.
I never want to feel like I took it for granted.
No,
I also never saw my footage from it. I only cared about making sure we produced the show for other people.
That just made a lot of noise.
I'm sorry. I'm emphatic. I talk with my hands.
That's a comedy routine. I get it. You're just trying to be funny.
No, but I'm just I talk with my hands a lot. I'm probably like covering my hand too much with a camera.
That's okay.
But no, I was always like, it wasn't about me. I told people like everyone's going to get their clip from this. If we don't get this out, you're all going to get like 8 HD quality camera footage. It's going to make you look way big. It's going to
look like a national TV show. Yeah.
You're going to look like you're supposed to be on TV, and that's the whole idea.
Yeah.
And someone asked me, "Did you ever see your footage?" And I was like, "No, I kind of at this point don't want to until everything else gets out or it gets a bigger version or it gets another life." And we're working on something with it.
Yeah.
So hopefully, and the new idea we have with it is pretty cool, and hopefully we can shoot more stuff in the future.
Well, whatever I can help with on it, you know, I'm here.
Yeah, I know. And I love that. That spark that comes up in your eye. Oh, new idea.
I like doing production. I'm a production guy, you know. I mean, look, I'm doing an interview with 5 cameras just for you.
Too many. You get that weird clip right
here.
Well,
I got a camera just doing the bald area.
You have a camera? Really? Oh, no.
The whole time
you have the worst part of my head. That's the bald part.
That's going to be the whole thing because that's the only camera that recorded.
you just get this awful, manic, bald, looks like a pack of uncooked hot dogs in the back of my head.
Sort of funny because when I went through chemotherapy, I thought I'd lose my hair, but I didn't. No.
How did you not lose your hair? Did it thin a bit?
I was on experimental chemo.
Okay.
And they said, you don't have much time, so we're going to put you on this experimental stuff. Mm-hmm. And it worked, but I didn't lose any hair because of it.
You didn't lose any hair?
Any hair. I'm losing more now than I did back then.
Well, that's time, Jeremy. You know. you've hold on to yours a lot longer than mine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that. You've always had the long hair?
Yeah, yeah.
You never wore it short?
No.
Ever?
No. It's too much work. Once you start cutting hair... Mm-hmm. It's a pain in the ass. That's why you probably
this. I have to buzz at least once a week. Yeah.
Yeah, but the point is, it's not you have to take care of it every day, you know, when you got long hair,
true.
You know?
Yeah.
And it gets weird and it gets frizzy and all this stuff, but I don't know, you know, I just, you know, do my thing, so. See, you should make a comedy record with hooks of songs.
Hooks of songs?
Yeah, so you could
There's a routine I have that we didn't get to film because this is all based on things that happened to me after we filmed the TV show.
Uh-huh.
I'll say it because this will be out. Whatever. I had a breakup happen while I'm on the radio, basically.
Wait, you got really?
Yeah. And so that's happening. I do a routine about it. I can't give it away because I'm giving away the routine. But there's songs in the bit that are like oh, the worst day of your life, and you're having, and then a song comes on. It's the perfect soundtrack, and then you still have to get on air and like read a commercial, and like you gotta hold it together. You can't, don't know what, you know, like, and so like that emotion while you're broadcasting,
because it'd be better.
You have to put on this front, right, while you're broadcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're having internally you're collapsing.
Hey, it's a wonderful day in Chicago, and you're looking at your phone. Oh, what?
Exactly. Exactly. I'll be honest. It started while I'm in the studio with Q101 and like I know where the conversation's going, but I still am on air while it's happening.
Uh-huh.
You know, so to me, it happened while I was on air.
Well, that's the best break.
I don't feel like I'm off air. I don't feel like I'm off air until
I get out of the studio and I just start listening to something else on my phone. Uh-huh. Or I start listening to a different station.
Right.
I don't feel off air until then. Because I still feel like you're on.
Uh-huh.
That adrenaline of radio is different like that. And I remember thinking like, oh man, ah, damn. Like this is, how am I going to, like is it was one of the most surreal. And then and the thing is I had to keep going back to work. Mm-hmm. So now you're going back to the point, like it's, ah, you know, I'm dwelling. But then it became a great bit. It's one of my favorite comedy things I've ever done. The person I had that relationship with, I don't know if they are aware of that. So that'll be an interesting conversation. But I think they'll be able to laugh about it. Yeah, I mean, eventually you grow out of things.
Well, there are many songs about, you know, breakups and getting together. Yeah. And a lot of times bands will do a song, but they never say who the girl or guy is or whatever. You know?
Well, the thing is, there's people in my life that know who this is.
Oh, okay.
But also, I don't think to be fair to her, I don't think she knew where I was when we were communicating with things. So I don't hold that circumstance against her. Anything.
Bitch.
Like people break up. You joke. Yes.
I mean, come on. She knew you were on the radio.
She knew I was on. No. But I mean, with voice tracking, though, you're taping ahead. You know, so maybe she didn't know I was in the studio at the time.
No, it should have been a live show.
Yeah, it could have been live. It could have been live. Yeah. But no, but there's that fun. But when you're in the studio, you're like, this is it. Like I knew like once I was on, all right, we're talking. You know? But no, that's one of my favorite bits of comedy and I really, really enjoy it, and hopefully
so if you can make it into little short things and make it into a 3-minute thing with maybe 10 little hooks of songs that so you can say
I'm thinking when I do this the special you film your hour of comedy, like do I want to do it with the music in there, but then when I put the show out am I going to be able to use that music, am I going to have the rights to that music?
Well, you that's know? The big problem,
but I mean like if you get to sell it to like a big streaming service, like can you give me the rights to this or go to a band and be like,
but if you only use 10-15 seconds of it,
sure.
Maybe
sure.
That's easier.
But also, it's also weird that I don't want to, like, hey, I'm sorry, your song's a punchline in this joke. But it's also, you're an emotional punchline. You're like an honest punchline, you know?
Where else are you going to get your song played?
That's a new thing now, everybody. Get your get a joke written about your song. It's going to be the new Bill Burr Netflix special. There you go. That's what you got to do, kids. You got to have a hit record. Yeah.
Cool. Well, this has been fun. This has been so fun.
Jerry, you've been a very, very great part of my career.
Well,
I'm indebted for a lot of great experiences to you and a lot of other comedians who worked on this project that we're referencing that we filmed. Some of it you may see on the internet and maybe see on television, hopefully in the future at some point. There's a lot of people who benefited from that. And I benefited in radio from it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember I was doing this stuff with you before I got Q101. I was away from Q101 for a little bit. I had an off-air role.
Right.
And then I wasn't getting on air and I left the station. And then we did the comedy project.
Uh-huh.
And then a month or two later, it was like, hey, do you actually want to come back and be a DJ here?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a very big part of that was I was doing a TV show with you.
Right. And
I don't think that would have happened without – I don't think I would have gotten Q101 on air.
Mm-hmm.
I worked there, but I don't think I would have been promoted to be up on air if I didn't do that with you.
Yeah, because they saw that they came down.
Oh, wow. He's moving. Yeah. He's doing it.
Yeah.
And that endorsement and that like oomph when it seemed like I was out of radio, or at least I was going to be out of radio or be out of media.
So you watched JBTV early on?
When I was a little kid, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I remember watching on – WJYS.
Right.
I remember you did a thing where you would email me your pictures.
Yes. Yes.
And you would put the pictures up during the credits.
Yes.
And I had a college radio show and I sent you the logo, the cartoon logo I wrote for my college radio show, which but it was creative, right? You make your own thing. You're your own brand.
I have a lot of that.
Yeah.
And you
remember I like rolled and I thought it was the coolest. It was the coolest thing to see my picture, sent to someone.
I loved all that artwork that they did.
Yeah, and people would send in like their artwork and stuff like that, and you would just put it up, and it would fly. I mind you, it would fly by, but it was local and fun and different and irreverent. And this isn't making fun of anyone who's corporate media or corporate stuff. It was violently not corporate television.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
and it struck me as like very like much like this is music for creative people.
Mm-hmm.
This is counterculture. And then for me to be on the biggest counterculture radio station, Q101 is that.
Yeah.
And you gave me that shot. And now I think I have a really great career and you really set those things up for me in a big way. And I'm always indebted to you for that.
Wow. Well, I'm so proud of you as a comedian, as an artist and being on radio and doing stuff. I want to do more stuff with you.
Sure. So. Be fun, man.
Yeah.
Get on the road. I know you don't want to leave the studio. I'll leave the studio for you.
I want to build another studio.
Yeah.
And we could do a comedy show then.
Sure.
Out of the studio.
Yeah.
And have rock bands come in.
Be fun, man.
And do all kinds of cool stuff.
And there's a bunch of good clubs and stuff we can film in town for sure, man.
Yeah.
Let's hit it.
What are some of the clubs here in town?
Lincoln Lodge is great. Lincoln Lodge is independently owned.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not to say that the other places aren't independently
owned. Do they tape anything now?
They do. Like the roast battle shows, we film all of it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. How do they film? Do they have multiple cameras?
We're doing two cameras. We have a tournament coming up. We're going to film a whole B-roll documentary about that and then maybe try and pitch that as a series.
Mm-hmm.
But then the clips are a big thing for us, though. Our social media presence is huge. They have a podcast studio there, too, and we've been taping a podcast there. Roast Battle Chicago, it's on Spotify and all these different things. It's on our YouTube channel too, so we have a video version of it. And that's people telling stories about, when I wrote this joke, it did this.
Uh-huh.
I know this made them that mad. And that's really fun. Uh-huh. The comedians in a car driving and making fun of each other is that never gets old.
A road trip.
Yes. And so we have that, and we're working on some things. But Lincoln Lodge is great. Zany's has a full digital setup right now to shoot. The great James Webb. James Webb is a great, great comedy producer. He just filmed Sam Morril's special, which is on Netflix.
Oh, really?
And he shot it at the Den Theater in Wicker Park. Beautiful space.
Mm-hmm.
And shot it all with local people, all on 4K, did it all himself, cut it all himself, and it's on Netflix, and it's just crazy.
Wow.
And like, I see the credits, it's like, I've drank at a bar with that person at 3 a.m. I drank at a bar with that person at 3 a.m. And they're eating, like, they have a Malort. You know, we know Malort in Chicago, right? It's an awful prank of a drink, and they give somebody their first Malort
Lauren
shot.
Lauren O'Neill loves it.
Yeah, it's a prank in a bottle. It's the worst liquor ever. You drink it, and you make the ugliest face, right?
It's licorice tasting
stuff,
it's
a Chicago, right? Like, rock prank. Someone comes to town, their band plays here for the first time. You give them Malort. Comedians, we do this. You have to have Malort.
Uh-huh.
You have to have
this
it.
This is Lauren. I was just here yesterday telling me this. Yes. You got to get Malort, and I can mix you up this. And I go, well, I don't drink.
Yeah,
you
don't drink.
No, I smoke pot.
Yeah, you've just always been pot.
You
right?
smoke pot, right?
I'll do an edible now and then, but I'm mainly just CBD.
I don't like
the smoke part. The smoke part always made me coffee. I don't like that feeling.
Yeah.
I don't like that feeling.
I have to roll my own joints and do all that. You know?
No, I
got them all. I got them all here ready to go.
No, and the thing is, the my wonderful partner, my wonderful girlfriend, she's in. Works in the dispensary business.
Uh-huh.
And stuff.
Oh, really?
And she's like, you sure you don't want? I was like, no, I just don't.
Yeah.
I like a good drink or two that brings me down, and CBD helps me fall asleep, and that's
well,
it
I
for
think
me.
You got to do what you got to do, and you know your limits, and that's the thing with either liquor or smoking or partying or having sex all the time or whatever.
All the time. It's so hard.
It's a 24-hour sexual revolution.
Yes. Wear it down to a nub.
All sex, all the time.
There, it sells. It sells. We're back in the
90s. You're on Sexy Radio 101.
Sexy Radio. Yeah. After Dark. All these songs are suggestive.
Yes.
Yeah, all that stuff. All this is like the artwork stuff, right?
Yes, this is actual.
Yeah, dude.
Look at this.
Zer-er-zy.
It would be funny if your artwork would show up here.
Oh, no, I don't know if it'll show up, but that was so crazy, though. Because it wasn't something that had anything. A lot of stuff you'd show would be like band artwork and then mentioning JBTV
but
in it.
Look how beautiful that is.
That's really cool,
These are actual fans that I scanned all this stuff during the pandemic. So I've got hours of this.
Would people mail this to you?
Yes.
Or would they,
we used to get in the old days.
I emailed you the thing I drew and I sent it to you.
Well, that's how I, It would be really funny, though, if it would show up.
It'd be crazy if it did.
It would be a comedy bit in the making.
Oh, man. I love the spirit of everything you do. And how it's just like you keep going.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the biggest thing.
Well, I lost everything. I mean, they took our studio away and the whole thing. They auctioned off all my memorabilia.
What, 18? Is it 18? 2018?
19.
Right before the pandemic.
Right after Chris Vicente passed away, we did a concert.
Metro. I remember I went to that. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen. It was amazing.
Yeah. Well, that was for my.
When you were in the cancer benefit.
Yeah, yeah. That was like bringing back the 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and
every 20 minutes was like everyone from every cool Chicago band.
Yeah.
Were some people from Smoking Popes there?
I think some people. Yeah. I mean, all the, Naked Ray Gun.
Yeah.
You know, and Andrew WK.
Yeah, it was insane.
Kill Hannah.
It was nuts,
man. It felt like the 90s. I was so, you know. And I was getting surgery the next day. It was really weird, you know. And then we went out to the rock and roll. And I actually did drink a little.
A little.
Well, I like sevens and sevens. I'll drink those, you know.
Yeah, but that's a lot for you, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't drink a lot.
But I could keep drinking, too.
Okay.
It's like with smoking or whatever. Mm-hmm. I like something. That's all I'll do.
Well, also, like with you, you've been to so many concerts, you don't want to go anymore. So for you to go to one... And be at one when you're not shooting it.
When I was sitting in Joe Shanahan's prime location.
Owner of the Metro?
At his table.
Yeah.
And Joe is so great.
Yeah, incredible. And what a history. 40 years. And also, Metro, a venue that is almost... it had hip-hop and different things.
Yeah, it's...
But it's very much built on alternative rock.
Yeah, yeah.
And rock bands in general. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, so much history there. Yeah. So much history.
I mean, we
there.
Taped the 93 Pumpkin show there.
Yeah. Did you tape the...
Siamese Dream.
Siamese Dream was there, and they just did a show. I think they just did a broadcast show.
They just did one. Yeah, I don't know. I had nothing to do with it.
No, but I caught some of it. It sounded great.
Yeah. I didn't like the way the station... Did you listen online?
No. No, I caught some of it. I caught some of it on the radio, which was a thrill to hear.
But did they cut commercials, like, right in the middle of songs?
I didn't hear all of it. I didn't know if they did
that. Well, I listened. It bothered me. I thought, like, if you're doing this and you got this, run a fucking commercial free.
Oh, or just have one big sponsor.
Why are you, like, running all these terrible commercials? It, like, cut into the music. I was really upset about that.
JVO hosted when the Pumpkins broke up in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we'd get back
James
together.
Van Osdell.
James Van Osdell.
A great guy. He's another awesome.
The perennial... music authority,
yeah,
and getting to work with him was like surreal.
Yeah, I put him on the TV station I'm on,
yeah,
VPod TV,
yeah,
and
Carvin Carney,
yeah, and I said do a video podcast because that's what people want to see, you know, and but the station's like, well, we got to get paid from this. It's like, come on, you run commercials, that's the way it works, and you're getting free entertainment here,
yeah,
you know. So
I remember him hosting. They had two shows. They did the United Center,
mm-hmm.
and then they were going to do the Metro, and then they were done.
Mm-hmm.
And the Metro show was the last one. I remember there was news reports about it, and it was a scene, and I was in high school, and I was dating a girl in high school who was out of the country and loved the Pumpkins and called me collect during her parents' family vacation to South America to ask me to tape it, because she heard that they were going to do it. And I knew about it. I was a big radio nerd. I was already listening to everything Q101 at the time anyway. So I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I remember I taped it. I remember I missed part of a song. I had to flip the tape so I could tape the other side. And I remember listening, and it felt like an event. And I remember they did have a sponsor, but it was like one main sponsor that they would go to mm-hmm. between songs mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But it was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And I remember like listening to that was really, really fun. And it was fun. I think it was great that they did a live concert on the radio.
Oh, I think it's awesome. Yeah.
Especially at night. I mean, the commercials are still there. You don't have the same type of audience you have in the day where people just want to hear everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you build up to it. And it's something special for your, like, the P1, I use an inside radio term. Your real diehard fans love something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to do stuff like that more often. I want to hear more live things like the Hulu. You bring up the Metallica show that was on Hulu. I loved Hulu's presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Lollapalooza, big concerts like they that you get to watch live,
and they delayed them so that they could fit them all into time.
Yeah,
and but Metallica produced their video.
It was great.
Yeah, and you saw it, right?
It was incredible.
Yeah, I love the fact that they were using two wire cams, and they weren't using. They're using $80,000 cameras with you know, $40,000 lenses on them.
And kudos, we were talking about Metallica and how they do so much of their own stuff. During the pandemic, they did this great series on their YouTube and their video channels online where they put up a show every Monday,
wow.
a full show. And some of them were like roughly produced from their early days. They did their Metro show from 1984, their first national tour, where it's clear they didn't sell out the entire Metro. They sold out like half of it, but it still looks great. And like the sound is really, really rough. I kind of like it because you know what it is.
Uh-huh.
But then like, here's one from 2017, all the different cameras, HD, all the pyro, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Stage in the round, all the big hit songs, where this rough band from 1984. It was a great web series. If you love Metallica, Metallica Mondays. They still have all, I think, still a majority of those are still up. And they did them for charity, too, which is really, really great.
Yeah.
Peoria, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. We're on in Peoria.
Yeah. I remember you saying that. Peoria, shout out Jukebox Comedy Club. Book me. What's going on?
Oh, really?
Peoria, Illinois. I want to be there.
Yeah?
I want to. I want to play the metropolis that is Peoria. It's
cool.
Mudvayne, and then it's me. That's what I think of. No, I've been to Peoria once or twice. Uh-huh. A great comedy club, though. But if you're out there, Jukebox Comedy Club, you're watching this, possibly, on your airwaves. Uh-huh.
Do you have to put quarters in to hear a joke?
Do you have to put quarters in? How many people have probably said that? How many people have probably walked in there and said that? Like, yeah, I want my quarterback, and they didn't like the show.
I only got 50 cents. That's how many. What do I get? How many jokes for 50 cents? Dial a joke.
Yeah, dial a joke. They probably, those were a thing, like the 1-800 numbers and stuff.
I don't
like
know.
That.
You know,
didn't know. What did they Might Be Giants have? They had the
Oh, they had. That's how I got them on my show. They were on. I'm trying to think of the name. Jay Flynn or somebody like that on WOR out of New York.
Just what a delightfully weirdo, fun band.
Yeah, they came.
So many different styles of music.
Well, I love Istanbul. It's not Constantinople.
Yeah.
And they were on the show, and they said, we have a dial a phone number. So I called them up, and they said, nobody's playing our music. So when I got the video, I was already playing it before I go, oh, Jay Might Be Giants. Istanbul's not Constantinople.
Love that music video.
And I played it 10 times on my TV show, back to back. I love this. I'm playing it again. They found out about that, and they came. They drove in from New York to be on my show to play it live.
That's great.
And then they had their accordion and stuff. And oh,
of course, I'm going to ask you. I mean, when you come back again and play, you know the song I'm going to request. Which one could that be?
I think it's Istanbul, not Constantinople, Jerry.
You got it.
Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople, now it's Turkish delight on a moonlit night. Every gal in Constantinople lives in Istanbul, not Constantinople. So if you've a date in Constantinople, she'll be waiting in Istanbul.
Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
People just liked it better that way.
So take me back to Constantinople.
No, you can't go back to Constantinople.
Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the worst? That's nobody business but the Turks.
Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
People just liked it better that way.
So take me back to Constantinople.
You can't go back to Constantinople. A long time gone, Constantinople. What Constantinople got the word? That's nobody's business but the Turk. Istanbul.
So thank you for being on JBTV. It's been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, and you're always welcome, and keep up your comedy. Anything I can do to help you along the way. Anytime you want to come here and do a show.
Yeah.
You know what the setup is now. You know how I do it.
Put me on the road, dude. I'll do the man on the street stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll shoot some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So let's do that.
I'll get one of these mic heads and just go out there and
get some stuff. Mics are great. Yeah. Shotguns are the best mics. I don't know why the news stations, occasionally you see them using them now. Mm-hmm. Because they sound good.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get all the other noise around.
You get the voice.
Yeah. Now, for a comic, you didn't want to use one of these.
You need an XLR with a...
But... Yeah. You could do one if you're doing a show too. I mean, you know.
For like a run around man in the street, like at a festival type thing. Yes.
Yeah, these are great. I remember I did my first Lollapalooza with this very microphone. Actually, this is a 38-9-year-old microphone. So
that microphone is as old as me.
Yeah. Well, JBTV started in 1984, so this 84. Is our 39th year this October.
Yeah, I'm a 83 baby, man.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
God, my daughter was born in 79, so. You stay away from her.
I will.
She's going to break up with you on the air.
Not on the air again!
Yes, on the air. Not only that, she's going to make up with you on the air.
On the air. Oh, that's heartwarming.
Yeah.
It comes back around. Or we got to sell it. It should be sponsored. Yeah. Right? You got to get it sponsored. Yeah.
She's going to have sex with you on the air.
No, it's not happening.
That didn't happen. Broadcasting sponsors did not happen. Mom, didn't
at
happen.
At my radio station in Milwaukee, one of my disc jockeys, we had the best look contest.
No way.
Yes. And you know the...
Come on,
when you hit the table like you hear a bump... The same thing with the turntables. He'd be on the air and it'd be boom, boom, boom. And I'd call up on the hotline. Damn it, stop doing that. You know, he would have sex with just about anybody that walked in the studio on the air while he was doing the show.
Hot mic?
Oh, yeah. He would even, he did a commercial for a hot dog place. And I'm not joking you. He said, it's the big beef. And you I mean, it was all sex. And it was like, it went on for like 5 minutes. And the guy got so much response. It was at Southridge or Northridge, one of the shopping centers where they had a hot dog place. And he did this really. And a girl literally was on the other side of the glass.
We had
a best look contest.
No.
It was 20 below zero. She had a winter coat on. She drops the winter coat totally naked. And she's like pressing up. And he's like on the air reading this commercial. And it was for the best look and the best feel contest. So you know what the best look was, and I think you can figure out the best feel. And then he had sex with her in the studio.
Wow.
On the air.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a different time.
Yeah.
What a different time.
Yeah. And that was Captain Whammo.
What a name. You can't go on the radio and be Captain Whammo.
So, God, that's never been said. I'm surprised I said that.
Yeah, there you go.
Do not use this in one of your comedy routines.
I won't. Go ahead.
I don't care.
Is it okay if I go? Am I rude? I was like, what's my exit point? I don't want to be rude and like just walk out while we're filming.
Kevin, you're going to be held hostage.
No, we have to keep broadcasting forever.
Non-stop. Joke after joke.
Until they kick in the door.
If I don't get another joke in another 10 seconds.
No.
That we put 50 cents into this damn jukebox.
No.
I want a good joke.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Appreciate
cool.
it.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude.
JBTV. There you go. The JBTV podcast, where we bring you the best music, the best interviews, and it's all unscripted and totally unrehearsed. Follow us on all the social media and spread the word. This is JBTV Music Television, the JBTV podcast. JBTV.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.